A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one about B2B account management. The tiered system where the more you spend, the more personalized attention you get. He's interested in how organizations that sell predominantly to businesses structure these account management systems, and what the common thresholds are across different industries for unlocking that white glove treatment. He also mentions his own habit of using B2B channels for personal purchases, and the wide gulf in service quality you encounter when you're buying as an individual versus buying on behalf of a company.
This is genuinely one of those invisible structures that makes the whole economy work, and almost nobody outside of procurement talks about it.
The secret plumbing of commerce.
Exactly, the secret plumbing. And the thresholds are fascinating because they're not arbitrary. They map to fundamental cost structures inside these companies. A B2B supplier doesn't assign you a dedicated account manager because they like you. They assign one because the math says your account generates enough margin to cover that person's salary and then some.
Where does that line typically fall? What's the price of a human being?
It varies enormously by industry, but there are patterns. In industrial supply, think fasteners, abrasives, safety equipment, the threshold for a named account manager usually kicks in around $50,000 to $100,000 in annual spend. Below that, you're in inside sales territory. You get a 1-800 number and whoever picks up.
Which is functionally the same as no one.
It's a lottery where the prize is someone reading a script. But even at $50,000 a year, you're probably not getting a dedicated person. You're getting assigned to a territory manager who covers maybe 60 or 80 accounts. They'll know your name if you call, but they're not proactively reaching out to see how the conveyor belt's running.
What does a real dedicated account manager actually cost in spend terms?
In most industrial verticals, the real line is around $250,000 a year, $250,000 in annual purchasing. At that point, the margin on your account, even in low-margin industries like bulk chemicals or construction materials, generates enough to justify a salary. Figure the average B2B account manager in the U.S. costs a company about $110,000 to $130,000 fully loaded. If the company's running 20% gross margin on your purchases, they need you spending at least $500,000 before you're clearly profitable to serve with a dedicated person. The $250,000 threshold works because they're betting you'll grow, or because you're bundled into a larger territory portfolio where the math averages out.
It's a loss leader on the relationship.
Or it's defensive. If you're buying $250,000 in electrical components and you're not getting a named rep, the competitor who offers you one might steal the whole account. The account manager isn't just a service feature, they're a retention mechanism.
Which explains why, when Daniel goes in as an individual to buy 4 bags of cement, the experience is...
And it's not that the company is being unreasonable. It's that the cost to serve a $50 order with a human interaction wipes out the profit entirely. The transaction cost alone, processing the order, running the payment, picking it in the warehouse, that's probably $15 to $20 right there. If you call and talk to someone for 10 minutes, you've just burned another $8 to $12 in labor. The math simply doesn't work.
The service gap isn't malice. It's arithmetic.
Arithmetic with a clipboard. And it's why self-service has become such a massive push in B2B. If a company can get their small accounts to order through a portal without human contact, suddenly those $50 orders become profitable.
Which is basically the Amazon model applied to industrial hose fittings.
An Amazon business is a fascinating case here. They've essentially collapsed the traditional tier structure. You can spend $30,000 a year or $300,000 and your interface is still a website. There's no named account manager unless you're at the very top tier. Amazon Business has a program called PBL, Preferred Business Level, but it's largely analytics and bulk pricing, not a person who takes you to lunch.
That's Amazon. They've never believed in human contact.
Right, and it works for them because their logistics infrastructure is the product. but in industries where the purchase is complex, where you're not just buying a thing but configuring a solution, the account manager remains irreplaceable. Nobody's buying a $50,000 CNC machine through a shopping cart.
Let's talk about those tiers then. What's the typical ladder look like?
Across most B2B industries, you see a structure that's been remarkably stable for decades. Tier 1 is self-service or e-commerce, 0 to maybe 10,000 a year. You get a login, a catalog, and a prayer. Tier 2 is inside sales, roughly 10,000 to 100,000. You have a phone number and an email address, and someone in a call center has your account pulled up when you call. They might recognize your name over time, but they're handling dozens of calls a day.
The illusion of relationship.
The Potemkin village of account management. Tier 3 is what's usually called a territory or field account manager. That's the 100,000 to half million band, depending on industry. This person covers a geographic region and maybe 60 to 100 accounts. You'll see them once or twice a year. They'll take you to a ball game if you're in the top end of their book.
Then Tier 4 is the actual dedicated person.
Tier 4 is the named dedicated account manager, half a million to maybe 5 million in annual spend. This person's job is you, or you and maybe 4 or 5 other accounts, max. They're in your facility regularly. They know your production schedule, your pain points, your boss's name, your boss's boss's name. They're effectively a part-time employee who's paid by the vendor. Above that, you get into strategic account management. These are the Fortune 500 relationships. 10 million plus in annual spend. You might have an entire team assigned, an account executive, a technical specialist, a customer success manager, a dedicated logistics coordinator. The vendor might even put an office in your building.
That's not account management anymore. That's a corporate embassy.
It's exactly a corporate embassy. And at that level, the switching costs become astronomical, which is, of course, part of the point.
What are the industry variations? You mentioned industrial supply. Where else do the thresholds shift?
Software is the most extreme case. In enterprise SaaS, the thresholds are shockingly low compared to physical goods. A company spending $30,000 a year on a software subscription will typically get a named customer success manager. The reason is margin. Software margins can be 70, 80, 90%, so that $30,000 in revenue might be $25,000 in pure gross profit. That easily covers a CSM who's handling maybe 20 accounts.
Whereas in cement or aggregates, the margin on $30,000 might be $2,000.
If you're lucky. In heavy building materials, margins are often single digits, so the threshold for personalized service gets pushed way up. A ready-mix concrete supplier isn't assigning anyone to you until you're doing $500,000 a year, easy. And even then, the account manager is often the same person who's also the dispatcher and the quality control person.
Multitasking as a business model.
The small and medium construction supply world runs on people doing three jobs. I saw a report from the National Association of Wholesaler Distributors that found something like 60% of B2B distributors with under $50 million in revenue still don't have a dedicated account management function separate from sales. The person who sold you the account is also the person who services it.
Which creates an interesting incentive. They're motivated to keep you happy because they want the next order, not because their job title says customer success.
That actually works better in a lot of cases. The pure account management model can create a handoff problem. The salesperson closes the deal, tosses it over the fence to the account manager, and the account manager has no emotional investment in the relationship. They're managing a portfolio, not building a book.
The dating versus marriage problem.
Courtship versus cohabitation. And in industries where the sales cycle is long and trust heavy, think specialized manufacturing equipment or industrial chemicals where the formulation matters. That handoff can be deadly. The buyer built trust with the salesperson. Then they never see that person again.
What about the middle ground? Daniel mentioned his approach of using B2B channels for personal purchases and finding ways to eliminate friction for the vendor. Are there industries where that actually works consistently?
It works best in industries where the B2B channels sell standardized products that don't require configuration or ongoing support. Fasteners are the classic example. A bolt is a bolt. If you know the spec, diameter, thread pitch, material, coating, you can order from a B2B supplier and they don't care whether it's going into a factory or your garage.
The bolt doesn't know who bought it.
The bolt is beautifully indifferent. Same thing with raw materials. Lumber, sheet metal, pipe, wire. These are commodities. The B2B channel adds value through volume pricing and availability, not through handholding. So if you're willing to buy in the minimum order quantity, or close to it, you can often get commercial pricing as an individual.
That's the key, right?
That's the entire game. MOQs exist because the supplier has fixed costs per order. Picking, packing, shipping, invoicing, and below a certain order size, those costs eat the margin. The MOQ is the line where the math starts working for them. If you can meet or get close to that line, and you make the transaction easy, a lot of smaller B2B suppliers will waive the business verification requirements.
How do you make a transaction easy for them?
Pay promptly, ideally by credit card or ACH, not net, 30 terms. Provide your own shipping account number so they're not managing freight. Send them a purchase order that's clean and complete, no back and forth on specs. Basically, look like a business on paper, even if you're not one.
The theatrical approach to procurement.
And it works. A small industrial supplier would rather sell to a well-organized individual than a disorganized business. The disorganized business costs them more in time and headaches.
Let's get into some specific threshold examples across industries. You mentioned software. 30,000 gets you a named person. What about office supplies?
Office supplies is a fascinating case because Staples and Office Depot essentially destroyed the traditional account management model for anything under $1 million. But in the independent dealer channel, the local office supply companies that survived, you can still get a named rep at around $25,000 to $50,000 a year. These are typically family-owned businesses where the account manager is often the owner's son or daughter.
Which means the service is probably better than the big guys anyway.
And they'll stock weird things for you. Try getting Staples to carry a specific pen refill because your CEO likes it. The local dealer will just do it.
What about food service?
Restaurant supply is one of the most tiered industries out there. Sysco and US Foods run extremely structured account management. A small independent restaurant doing $150,000 a year gets a different experience than a regional chain doing $2 million. At the low end, under $50,000 a year, you're ordering through an app and maybe you have a number to call. 50 to 150 gets you a territory rep who visits every couple of weeks. Above 250, you get a dedicated consultant who helps with menu planning, seasonal sourcing, cost optimization.
The account manager becomes almost a business consultant at that level.
That's exactly the pitch. Sysco's whole marketing approach to independent restaurants is, we're your business partner, not just your food supplier, and at the high tiers, they actually deliver on that. They'll analyze your menu profitability, suggest dishes to drop or add, help you price. It's valuable.
Which makes leaving them harder, of course.
The switching cost isn't just the food, it's the expertise. If you've built your menu around a Sysco consultant's guidance, leaving means rebuilding that knowledge base from scratch. That's the stickiest kind of account management, when the value isn't the product but the advice wrapped around it.
What about industries where the account manager is effectively a regulatory requirement?
That's a whole category. Pharmaceuticals, medical devices, anything aerospace. In those industries, the account manager isn't really about service, they're about compliance. They're making sure you're using the product correctly, documenting it, staying within regulatory bounds. The FDA doesn't care about your customer experience, but they absolutely care about traceability and adverse event reporting.
The account manager is also a compliance officer.
Often a technical trainer. In medical devices, the rep might be in the operating room during procedures, advising the surgeon on the implant or the instrument. That's not account management in the traditional sense. That's a hybrid role that doesn't map to any of the standard tiers. And those roles command compensation that would make a traditional account manager weep, $150,000 to $250,000 base plus commission.
Let's go back to something Daniel raised, the gulf in service between buying as a business and buying as an individual from the same vendor. Have you experienced this yourself?
I used to order medical supplies for the practice, and when I called in with the practice's account number, I got a completely different phone tree, different hold music even. It was like walking into a restaurant and being asked, "Do you have a reservation?" The entire experience bifurcates at that moment.
The velvet rope of commerce.
It's not just speed of response, it's the quality of the interaction. When I called as the practice, the person on the other end could see our entire order history, knew our typical reorder patterns, could suggest alternatives if something was backordered. When I called as myself, I got, "What's your order number?" and a series of transfers.
Which is exactly the point of the tier system. It's not just about being nice to big customers. It's about storing and deploying institutional knowledge about the relationship.
That's the phrase right there. A good account manager carries your history in their head. They know you always order in multiples of six. They know you hate the new packaging on the widgets, and they warn you before the order ships. They know your fiscal year ends in September, so you might need to accelerate or delay an invoice.
That's not customer service. That's an externalized memory system.
Businesses pay a premium for it, whether they realize it or not. The margin that funds the account manager is built into the pricing. At the high tiers, companies are often paying 5 to 15% more per unit than they would through a self-service channel. They're buying the relationship as a separate line item, even though it doesn't appear on the invoice.
Is that actually a good deal?
Depends entirely on the cost of failure. If you're buying paper clips, no. If you're buying components for a production line where downtime costs $10,000 an hour, the premium for having someone who will answer the phone at 2 AA and get you a replacement part is not just a good deal. It's insurance that pays for itself the first time you use it.
The account manager premium is essentially an insurance policy against supply chain disruption.
That's one way to frame it. Another is that you're paying for priority access to constrained supply. When there's an allocation, the account manager decides who gets the limited inventory. If you're a name in their phone, you get the call before the public knows there's a shortage.
Which we saw dramatically during the pandemic supply chain crunch. The companies with strong account relationships got the PPE, the semiconductors, the lumber. Everyone else got a back-ordered notice.
That experience reshaped a lot of procurement strategies. I've seen data showing that after the supply chain disruptions of the early 2020s, something like 40% of companies deliberately consolidated their spending with fewer suppliers to move up the tier ladder. They traded pricing leverage for relationship leverage.
A rational trade in an irrational supply environment.
Once you've experienced being a Tier 4 account at a critical supplier, it's very hard to go back to being Tier 2 somewhere else to save 3%.
What about the account manager's perspective? What does that job actually look like day to day?
This is where the romance of relationship building meets the reality of CRM software. The typical B2B account manager is spending a third of their time on administrative work, updating Salesforce, generating reports, processing quotes. A third on reactive problem solving. The customer's order is late, the product is defective, the invoice is wrong. And maybe a third on proactive relationship work, visits, calls, strategic planning.
Two-thirds of the job is basically triage and paperwork.
The triage part is what actually proves the value. When something goes wrong, and in complex B2B supply chains, something is always going wrong. The account manager is the person who fixes it. That's where the relationship is forged. Not at the steak dinner, in the crisis.
The steak dinner is just the retainer.
The steak dinner is maintenance. The crisis is where the bond forms. A procurement director once told me that he judges account managers by how they handle the first major problem. If they disappear into, "Let me check with my supervisor" limbo, he starts looking for alternative suppliers. If they own the problem and fix it, he stops taking calls from competitors.
The account manager is being auditioned in every crisis.
And the best ones know this. They almost welcome the problems because each one is an opportunity to demonstrate value that no self-service portal can match.
Let's talk about the industries where the tier model is breaking down or changing in interesting ways.
Construction materials is going through a fascinating shift right now. Traditionally, it's been extremely relationship-driven. The local lumberyard, the concrete plant, the rebar fabricator. You know the owner. You have an account. You get called when prices are about to move. But the big national players, Builders First Source, ABC Supply, have been consolidating and centralizing account management into regional hubs.
The local relationship is being replaced by a call center in a different state.
It's causing real friction. A contractor who's been buying from the same yard for 20 years suddenly can't call the yard manager anymore. They have to go through an 800 number. The yard manager has been instructed not to take orders directly because everything has to flow through the system.
The system being the enemy of the relationship.
the system being the relationship, which is a very different thing. The company's theory is that the system remembers everything, never takes a sick day, and can't be poached by a competitor. The account manager who knows your business is also an account manager who could take your business to a competitor if they switch jobs.
The tier system is partly about capturing the relationship inside the institution, rather than inside a person.
That's the eternal tension in B2B account management. The company wants the relationship to be with the brand, not with the individual rep, but the customer wants the opposite. They want one person who knows them and can make things happen. Every CRM implementation, every account team restructuring, is an attempt to resolve this tension.
Because you can't automate trust.
You can't. You can systematize around it, you can build processes that support it, but trust is fundamentally a human phenomenon. It lives in the gaps between what the contract says and what actually happens.
What about industries where the tier system is so baked in that it's practically a caste structure?
Aerospace and defense is the extreme case. You have primes, the Boeings and Lockheeds of the world, who get a level of attention that borders on obsequiousness. Then you have Tier 1 suppliers who get dedicated account teams from their own suppliers. Then Tier 2, Tier 3, all the way down to small machine shops who can barely get a quote. The entire supply chain is organized around this hierarchy, and moving up is a multi-year process of certifications, audits, and relationship building.
At the top, the account management is almost governmental in scale.
Boeing suppliers don't have account managers. They have program managers, supply chain managers, quality engineers, and on-site representatives who are physically embedded at the supplier's facility. It's not a relationship, it's a joint venture in everything but legal structure.
What's the smallest industry where you see genuine, personalized account management?
I'd point to specialty industrial distribution. Things like laboratory supplies, or high-end woodworking tools, or professional audio equipment. These are industries where the total addressable market is maybe a few $100 million, the customer base is a few thousand businesses, and the products require genuine expertise to specify correctly.
Niche enough that the supplier knows everyone.
The supplier's account manager is often a former practitioner. The lab supply rep used to work in a lab. The pro audio rep used to run sound for tours. They're not managing accounts. They're talking shop with peers who happen to be customers.
Which is probably the highest form of B2B relationship. The account manager as colleague rather than vendor.
It's the hardest to scale, which is why you don't see it in large industries. Once the market gets big enough, the MBAs arrive and start optimizing the humanity out of it.
The humanity as a cost center.
The humanity as a variable cost to be minimized. And look, from a pure business perspective, they're not wrong. A lot of what account managers do is economically inefficient. The question is whether the inefficiency is waste, or whether it's the necessary friction that makes the whole system trustworthy.
That's the tension that runs through every tier, every threshold, every industry. How much human friction do you need to make the transaction feel safe?
And the answer varies by the stakes of the purchase. Nobody needs a relationship to buy paper towels. But if you're buying something that could shut down your factory, or compromise your product, or get you sued, you want a human being on the other end who will answer the phone.
The tier system is fundamentally a risk management structure dressed up as a service model.
That's the thesis. The account manager isn't really there to make you feel special. They're there to absorb risk. Their job is to be the person you call when the thing that isn't supposed to happen happens. Everything else. The quarterly business reviews, the lunch meetings, the holiday cards, that's just keeping the channel open for when it matters.
The holiday card is a disaster preparedness mechanism.
You laugh, but that's literally what it is. A relationship that only activates during emergencies doesn't survive. You need the low-stakes interactions to build the muscle memory so that when the high-stakes moment arrives, the call gets answered.
Let's circle back to Daniel's point about using B2B channels for personal purchases. Is there a coherent strategy there for someone who's not running a business but wants better pricing and service?
The strategy is essentially act like a small business, not a consumer. That means a few things. 1. Have a company name, even if it's just a DBA you registered for $50. 2. Have an EIN or at least be prepared to provide a tax ID. 3. Order in commercially reasonable quantities, not one of something, but a case or a carton or whatever the natural business unit is. 4. Don't ask for consumer-level handholding. Know what you want, provide the part number, make the transaction frictionless.
The frictionless part seems to be the real key.
It's everything. The reason B2B suppliers resist consumer customers isn't snobbery, it's that consumers require more handholding per dollar of revenue. They ask more questions, they return things more often, they need help with specifications. If you can be a consumer who acts like a business buyer, informed, decisive, low maintenance, a lot of doors open.
The art of being an easy customer.
Which is a skill in itself. And it's not about being a pushover, it's about being clear, complete, and quick. Send a purchase order with all the information they need. Don't make them chase you for clarification. Don't dispute charges unless there's a genuine error. If you do those things, you'll get treated better than a lot of actual businesses.
Because the actual businesses are often terrible at those things.
You would be shocked at how many companies with 50 employees and 10 million in revenue submit purchase orders that are missing basic information. The procurement function at small and medium businesses is often someone who got assigned the job because they were organized, not because they were trained. The bar for being an easy customer is surprisingly low.
What's the number one piece of advice for someone who wants to move up a tier with a supplier?
Most companies have a published threshold for dedicated account management, and if you're close to it, they'll often bump you up if you express interest. The second piece of advice is consolidate your spending. If you're buying from 5 different suppliers at $20,000 each, you're a small account at all 5. If you consolidate to one supplier at $100,000, you're suddenly in a different conversation.
The political logic of procurement. You're a more important constituent if you concentrate your votes.
Suppliers will often help you consolidate. They'll say, "What else are you buying elsewhere that we could supply?" They want to move you up the tier as much as you want to move up because it makes you stickier. It's one of the rare situations in commerce where the incentives are aligned.
What about the industries where the tier system is essentially a fiction, where everyone gets the same service regardless of spend?
It's rare, but it exists. Some commodity markets, think bulk salt, or basic lumber commodities, are so price-driven that service barely enters the equation. The product is interchangeable, the pricing is transparent, and the account manager is just an order taker with a slightly fancier title. In those markets, trying to build a relationship is almost beside the point. You're buying on price and availability, period.
The relationship is with the market, not the vendor.
The market does send Christmas cards.
Which is probably for the best. Can you imagine the market's holiday letter? Greetings from supply and demand.
This year has been volatile, but ultimately clearing.
The children are at equilibrium.
See, this is why we don't do bits.
We absolutely do bits. We are doing one right now.
But let me bring this back to something substantive. The tier system we've been discussing. It's not static. Companies are constantly recalibrating where the lines fall based on margin pressure, competitive dynamics, and technology. The threshold for dedicated account management has been creeping upward in most industries over the past decade.
Because the technology makes it cheaper to serve mid-tier accounts without humans.
A $100,000 account that would have had a territory rep 10 years ago is now served through a customer portal with maybe quarterly check-in calls. The human relationship is being reserved for the top 10 or 20% of accounts by revenue.
Which creates an interesting divide. The top accounts get more attention than ever. Dedicated teams, embedded personnel, strategic planning, and everyone else gets less.
The barbell effect. The middle is being hollowed out. It's the same dynamic you see in retail, in media, in basically every industry. The premium and the automated are both growing. The medium-touch middle ground is shrinking.
For the businesses stuck in that shrinking middle, they're getting less service than they used to, but they're not big enough to demand more. That's a frustrating place to be.
It's the procurement equivalent of the middle-class squeeze. And the solution, as we said, is either consolidate to move up or get extremely good at self-service to thrive in the automated tier. Being in between is the worst of both worlds.
You're paying a premium for a relationship you're not actually getting.
You might not even realize it. The pricing structure often embeds a service cost that assumes some level of human support. If you're not using that support, either because you don't need it or because it's not actually available to you, you're overpaying.
Which suggests that a smart procurement strategy includes a hard-nosed assessment of what service tier you're actually in, not what tier the marketing materials imply.
That's the core discipline of professional procurement, understanding the difference between the promised service model and the delivered one, and then pricing accordingly.
To bring this full circle, for Daniel, and for anyone else who's trying to navigate B2B channels as an individual or a small business, the game is essentially understand where the thresholds are, act like you belong on the right side of them, and don't pay for service you're not receiving.
When you do get the account manager's attention, use it wisely. The relationship is an asset. Don't burn it on things you could have handled yourself through the portal. Save the phone call for when it matters.
The relationship as a scarce resource to be deployed strategically.
Which is, of course, exactly how the big accounts use it. They're not calling their account manager to ask about order status. They're calling when a production line is down.
Act like a Fortune 500, even if your enterprise is a garage and a dream.
The garage and a dream is how a lot of those Fortune 500s started. The account management structure may not have been designed for the little guy, but the little guy who understands it can navigate it. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early Renaissance, a species of freshwater jellyfish was discovered in a remote lake in what is now Mali, only to be declared extinct by local scholars in 1492 after a prolonged drought evaporated its sole habitat. The jellyfish, which had no known relatives in Africa, was never documented by European naturalists and remains a footnote in a single manuscript held in Timbuktu.
A Malian freshwater jellyfish that vanished the year Columbus sailed.
Sometimes I wonder if Hilbert is making these up.
We'll never know. And that's the point. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.